All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of the Temple of Hoop podcast. I'm your co-host, Coach Mabels, a.k.a. J. Mabes, here as always with the homie Kings. What's going on, my guy?
Man, suffering, bro. Suffering, you know, Raiders L. Then your Cowboys let me down. it's just all bad for me this weekend.
Yes, man. That's probably one of the three worst Cowboy losses I've ever endured as a fan. What I watched today, it's going to take me a minute to get over that, man. That hurt my soul. Just the way they started out so lax, 14 penalties, and then just in true Cowboys fashion, give you that fake ray of hope at the end. Lose. Like, that was just like a typical, that hit everything on a bingo card for a Cowboys playoff loss. So, you know, we'll see what it is. Anyway, we got a really special guest. I've been waiting to get this dude on for a minute. Interacted with him on the timeline. Became a big fan of what he talks about. We have a co-host of Sports 56 WHBQ Grind Time, radio personality in Memphis, Anthony Sane. On Twitter, he's at Sane Asylum. Anthony, what's going on with you, my guy?
Man, I'm good, brother. I'm barely hanging on, though. It is not whatever time it is there in Memphis.
I know. I had to add, when I reached out to Ant to come on the show, I was like, you Eastern or Central? I had to make sure, man. I know it's crazy.
Man,
we appreciate
it. I'm old as hell, man. I'm using deep REM sleep round by this time.
I know. We appreciate you. We got to ask, man. We know you like a son of the city. You are on Memphis Sports Radio. Are you a Titans fan?
I grew up on the 49ers, actually, which is why I'm kind of laughing at what y'all was saying.
See,
I'm not the biggest NFL fan.
Okay.
I mean? Like, I grew up as a kid, you know, 49er fan, Montana, Steve Young, Jerry Rice, you know, that era. And when the Titans came to Memphis / Nashville, I transitioned over, you know, over time. Okay, I'm kind of indifferent about the NFL now, but between the 49ers and Titans, whichever one's better, I kind of root for. So I'm kind of geeked because I actually can pull for both of them now. So
I know they both, man. I'm sick, man. Anyway,
hey, you should be though, man. But we all make our choices in life, man. You chose to be a Cowboy fan, so
it's one of those things I wish I could turn off, man. Trust me. But we invited Anthony here because the Grizzlies are just probably the shocker of the NBA season on a positive note, at least. Had a 11-game winning streak, was it?
Yeah, it was
11. 11-game winning streak.
Just got it
broken by the Dallas Mavericks, who are playing all right in their own right. They won 8 of their last 10 themselves. Man, but the Grizzlies, they do sit at 30-15, tied with the Utah Jazz for the third seed. I said about a week ago, I felt like they were, you know, starting to hit all the bells of an actual contender. People thought that was a spicy take. I do not. I look at it as if it wasn't just Memphis, you probably would be like, yeah, it's a team, but it's Memphis. We're not accustomed to seeing them, you know, in that light since the, you know, grit and grind era. So just real quick, Anthony, just your post on the team. You watched them a lot more than me and Kings. You're tapped in with them. Do you feel this team can make at least, you know, win a couple rounds in the playoffs, be that, you know, reach that, you know, scary team status?
Well, you made some key points. I'll start by saying this. I'm not saying they will do that, but they definitely have the formula, the keys to do something like that. You talked about, do they check off the boxes to be a title contender? And they do. They've got a superstar player that has the ball in his hands and Ja Morant. You got an all defensive team level player in Jaren Jackson, which I'm still trying to wrap my mind around because, you know what I mean? If you look at Jaren Jackson's on off numbers, they're incredible.
Like, yeah, we're going to talk about JJ. Yeah. I got to see it. That's crazy. Yeah. That was a crazy flip of the script this season.
Yeah. So, you know, you got all defensive team level player in Jaren Jackson Jr., you've got a perimeter defender in Dylan Brooks, who's also a maniac. That's another. That's
you
something
need that. You people, need that though.
Yeah. Every if you look back at every championship team, there's one crazy dude. I don't know if I can curse it out on this podcast, but there's one crazy guy on every team. You know what I mean? And Dillon Brooks is that guy for us. Plus, he's a great, you know, two-way player as well. And you got to have outside shooting, and you get that from a guy like Desmond Bane for sure, who's been incredible. That's the recipe, man. That's been the recipe for years. Only thing that, as a fan of the team, being blessed to cover the team that you're also a fan of, only thing that I would say is that we don't have the versatile 6'8", 6'9", 6'7" type player on our team.
Right.
That you see, that you know, you've seen in every, you know, championship team, you know, forever, it seems like. But as far as everything else, man, they've got the things that would, you could see them definitely making a run in the playoffs. But of course, that everything, it comes down to health, matchups, you know, right, all those type of things. So, you know, but we'll see, man. It's exciting to talk about that type of stuff with a team that's exactly in year three of a complete rebuild. Like, I was talking to someone else today, and the Grizzlies 3 years ago, Marc Gasol and Mike Conley were on this roster. You know what I mean?
Like, that's crazy.
People
that's
forget crazy about that, man. Like, that was 3 years ago. You know what I mean? So to be here now, just 3 years later, it's a phenomenal place to see the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I just beforehand the Kings for his time. I just want to say the late lotto, mid lotto drafting has been just crazy.
Oh yeah, they and haven't missed at all, yeah, man.
If you're a small market team, that's like almost a necessity to kind of make it work. I think they're on the verge of being like the, you know, this generation San Antonio Spurs, kind of build everything from within. Because just, you know, Memphis is not going to be a free agent destination. You know, they're not for superstars, mm-hmm, at least, but you hope that you build a good enough roster where you at least get, you know, good vets to consider it. I think that's where, you know, Memphis is heading. Kings, I know you were kind of leaning with me when we discussed this team. They kind of caught our eye a couple weeks ago. Where are you with Memphis as a potential, you know, contender right now? You know, looking at a big picture right now.
I think Memphis, they're a tough team. They have a lot of, like I said, versatility, a lot of length. I like a lot of the size from Dillon Brooks, from Bane, from Jaren Jackson Jr. John Moran is obviously super explosive. One of the guys I'm always going to be upset that Minnesota let go, Tyus Jones, is a great guard. I was adamant on keeping Tyus as well as Rubio, and we unfortunately let both of them go. But, you know, Tyus is a great backup guard. You know, Memphis is young. They can play a variation of styles. I think the one key thing with them to look for is, you know, just obviously the experience factor, you know, how much experience they have playing in those championship type of rounds and playing those, down to the wire playoff series that you always are going to get when you, especially in the Western Conference playoff run. And then also, you know, how much they can, you know, to take on like teams that are strong in the interior. I think, you know, that's maybe one of the, you know, weaker points you can test Memphis on a little bit. It's just, you know, can they handle like a threat, like, you know, a Giannis type, you know, a LeBron type that's physical, that's always going to try and pressure the rim consistently. That's probably one of the, you know, the two main things that I would look at. But other than that, they have all the ingredients, they have the recipe. I was one of the few people before the season of Maples. Remember, I said the trade with the Pelicans was a win-win.
Yeah, I remember you said that. Yeah,
I said that in July, and people for whatever reason thought Memphis was trying to get worse, and I couldn't understand it, because when they traded for Steven Adams, I thought to myself, you know, they have Jaren Jackson Jr. They have a bunch of, you know, versatile perimeter shooting forwards. It's like they needed that Steven Adams physical type of interior big. Like that would have, that made more sense for them than keeping Jonas, who's more of a shooting type big. And obviously Jonas makes more sense for the Pelicans, who needed that type of spacing for a Zion and BI. So for me, that was a no-brainer swap for them. And then I also like the fact that they got another pick from that. And, you know, I always told people, same thing that we talked about right now, if you're Memphis, you're going to build from the draft. So getting picks when you can is always going to be a win for you, because it's going to be hard to sign big-time stars. You know what I mean? So it's like these are things that fans don't think about. obviously, when they look at trades like that from other teams, they assume like everybody operates like the Lakers and the Warriors and the Nets, where they can just sign anybody whenever. It's like these type of teams have to think down the line, because you know, they have to be able to build through the draft. They have to be able to have their draft picks, have their assets to be able to make any type of trades to improve the team. So Memphis has done an A-plus job on rebuilding and being competitive, and it's, you know, how far they can go is going to depend on just, you know, execution of the assets that they do have, the development that they have with the young guys already. And if, you know, if they can develop, they'll be a title contender easily. I mean, you saw what the Suns did just by getting just one Chris Paul to their core.
Right.
You know, if Memphis just adds maybe just one, you know, piece, they're right there too with that type of echelon for contenders of going to the finals with a young squad.
Right. So the thing I've heard when I marked them off, the main, when I put the tweet out there, the main pushback I got was there's no second star. You know, there's the big, we're in the dynamic dual area, big three era, right? You know, so that was the pushback I got. My thing was, if you had been watching lately, especially lately, in my head, you know, Jaren Jackson is that guy to me. And I think, but you got, it's one of those things where you got to watch to see, especially like defensively. He is legitimately an all league defender this season. It's kind of crazy because that was not his MO at all last year. Talk about that development from him and possibly him being, you know, trying to morph into a number two on this team. Because I saw, opened my eyes when I started watching this. They played the Lakers, and he got AD on that mismatch. And he put his shoulder in the AD's chest three times and put up a jump hook. And I was like, okay. I never seen that from Jaren Jackson. So Just talk about, you know, the switch that he's flipped this year, Anthony, and just what, you know, what's kind of clicked for him this season.
Jaren is a very peculiar case, man. He's one of those guys where his best ability has been his availability. If you look at all of his numbers over the past 3 years, when he's played and when he's not been injured, when he's not had foul problems, he's been incredible in the time you've seen. If you want to see some vintage Jaren Jackson Jr. in his short 3-year career, if you want to see some vintage Jaren Jackson Jr., go check out Jaren in the bubble a couple years ago before he got hurt. He was murdering, you know what I mean? And he's one of those guys where you talk about unicorn-type players. Jaren's one of those guys who he's not shooting the ball well at all this year, but you're talking about a guy who's able to knock down threes at a high clip, who can put the ball on the ground and get to the basket. He's not like a Giannis or a KD. He doesn't have that type of ball handling ability, but he has an ability to cover ground quickly. Like, he can take long steps and get a couple dribble moves off to get to the basket. He's been getting to the free throw line a lot more this year. He's actually, you know, scoring in the post more. And it's weird because we've seen Jaren's game develop within the season, if that makes any sense. When he first started the season, he was just shooting a bunch of threes, hovering around the three-point line, not really getting involved in the offense. And, like, something just clicked, man. Like, we made jokes about Dylan Brooks being like a Jaren whisper, or Jaren being afraid of Dylan or something like that. We joke about that type of stuff. But we're starting to think it's for real, because the conversation came up in a press conference, and Dylan was like, I motivate Jaren. Like, and it was so strange to hear him saying it. I was like, nah, it ain't strange, because it seems like that's actually what happened. But Jaren, he's one of those guys. Something that people forget is that this Grizzlies team is super young. We're the second youngest team in the NBA.
That's crazy. That's
John crazy. Morant is exactly, because the team is just that young. It's supposed to be terrible. It's supposed to be Orlando, like, for decades. You know what I mean? So, like Ja is super young. Ja is 22 years old. I think 21 or 22, whatever age he is, Jaren is younger than Ja is. And Jaren played a year before Ja did. So it's wild, man, because he's one of those guys where he's very immature. And I don't mean like in a bad way, not like Dwight Howard immature, but like he's still got a lot of innocence, youthful innocence to himself. Jaren does. Because when we first got Jaren and we found out that he was a guy that could block shots, people asked him, how does he time his blocks, like how has he became a good shot blocker? And he's like, you know, second, third in the league now in shot blocks. They asked him how was he able to block shots when he was a rookie, and his answer was, I learned from playing NBA 2K. And that was a real answer. Like, that was where he said he learned how to block shots. And, you know, that's the type of, you know, immaturity you talk about with Jaren. who's still a kid. Just learned how to drive recently in the last year or two. I remember seeing Jaren in public, and this tall, 8 feet tall kid walks into the room, ducking to get into the door. He's talking about how he just learned how to drive. I'm like, man, you're a millionaire. You're like 21 years old. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? So it's, you know, you're talking about that level of kid. So there's, with all, I said all that to say that he's still a work in progress. He's still moldable. He's still, he's like this big bag of tools that you still have to try to work on, because with Jaren, we still feel like we're dealing with a guy who you haven't even touched close to what his potential could be. He's 22 years old. You know what I mean? So we don't really know what he's going to end up being. And you see so many weird flashes of things he's able to do, whether it's some type of Euro step or, you know, throwing up floaters in the paint, like you said, bodying up with Anthony Davis, or going one-on-one with Karl Anthony Towns again, 20-10-5. Like, we don't – like, it's so strange, the stuff you see with Jaren, man. But we're here for it. Like you said, he's not been injured this year. He missed one game due to knee soreness. He hasn't had the COVID bug at all this year. So we're just – it's just been an extremely pleasant surprise. We're talking about a guy, like you said, who's an all-defensive – team candidate type of player, for sure. Right.
Kings, your thoughts on Jaren Jackson? I know you've always been a fan of the talent.
Yeah, I mean, for the longest time with Jaren Jackson Jr., it's always been that people would always say that people like the idea of Jaren Jackson Jr. More than the actual player that Jaren Jackson Jr. was. That was always like the running theme they had. But just this year, he's putting it together with his versatility, especially the defense. I think – for me, him becoming the defender that he is now was always the way for him to elevate the team. Because when you see those physical tools that he has, that you always think about how much of a terror a guy like that could be defensively, being able to switch out on the perimeter, being able to guard guys in the interior. Like, that always is what you look at when you see a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr., who's 6'10", very fluid, very mobile. It's like, man, this guy could really wreck offenses from a defensive standpoint, and to see him buy into that is a pleasant surprise. I think that's been a big driving factor for Memphis in helping them shore up that defense and helping them reach the level that they are right now, is having that all defensive caliber player. Because a lot of young teams that are good or are competitive, like you see with the Wolves, you see with the that you kind of saw with the Pelicans when Zion was there, was that they're very good at scoring, but they're not very good defensively. And that's right. Always what keeps them in that 500 tier of just, playing low-level seed. It's not until they defend to where you see them take the next step. That's what you saw with Phoenix last year, right? Mm-hmm. You saw Devin Booker and Ayton defend at a high level. Then Phoenix finally took that next step. So it's when these young guys start to defend at a high level, and you see Ja doing it too this year, improving his defense. When you see guys start to defend at a high level, then you see the team really take off, because now they're playing a complete game. So Jaren Jackson Jr. is molding himself into a complete player, and he's super young. So offensively, he still has a lot of time to kind of refine his game and kind of find out what he wants to be offensively. I think he can shoot the ball. He's long. He can put the ball on the floor. So I think he's still trying to mold himself into figuring out, where he wants to go offensively. And that's exciting for Memphis, because now, they're a good team now. They're a dark horse now. And they're far from being a complete team.
Yeah, man, that's the thing. I think Anthony hit it on the nail. That I didn't know they were I knew they were, like top five. That being the youngest team in basketball and being a top five team defensively. Let's talk a little
Steven
bit.
Steven Adams is the oldest player on our team. He's like 20. Right.
Yeah. So I got to ask, we haven't heard much talk about Taylor Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, players have got to go out there and win. But if you have a youngest team in the NBA and they're a top five team defensively, I think something's got to be said as far as the coach. It's so hard to get young guys to be effective NBA basketball players on offense, which is what they want to play, usually how they got drafted. But to have them so locked in on a string defensively, just talk about, a little bit about Taylor Jenkins and just, what he's brought to the team over these last couple years, Anthony.
It's really strange as well, because you're talking about a situation where we're a young team that's developing ahead of schedule, and we're led by a coach that's a young coach that's developing.
Right.
Ahead of schedule, you know what I mean? And it's interesting because – I don't know if you guys have this in the market you guys live in, but we have open practice here in the beginning of the season. Like when they have training camp, they take one day where they have an open practice where fans get to come.
The Lakers and the Warriors do that. The Lakers and the Warriors.
Okay, cool. I was talking to someone else and they said they didn't know what I was talking about. Yeah. But so, yeah. So they had open practice here. And typically when they do it, they're running NBA drills. They might scrimmage. They do a player introduction. But it's real structured. It looks like something you see in the actual NBA practice. They run drills and, you know, those type of things. Taylor Jenkins' first year, they're playing like field day PE games, like knockout, just weird, just games we played as kids with the basketball and a goal. But it's not particularly any kind of structure to it, like just races and just weird kind of stuff they were doing, right? And I was like, okay, this guy's on some PE teacher vibe type thing, whatever, you know, that's what's up. But and then we interviewed the players later on in the season when they were kind of winning ahead of schedule because, you know, they made it to the play-in tournament their first year together, you know, the first year of the rebuild. So we're talking to the guys. We're like, all right, so how do you guys get this chemistry? And it was like, oh, well, you know, today in practice we had a we were playing dodgeball. Or we were playing, what's the game? Kickball. You know what I mean? Like, this, like it's so weird, man. Like, because our team is super young and they're playing little kid games. It's, we didn't play basketball today. We played kickball for practice. You know what I mean? And that's the type of stuff that he does to build chemistry with these guys. And you'll walk in sometimes, and I walked into practice one day, and they're having a free throw shooting contest with a championship belt where the winner has a championship belt around his waist. And it's like they're just – they do these wild things to just build chemistry and camaraderie with each other. And those guys genuinely play like they love each other, like they're playing for each other all the time. And he's created a wild environment for that, and he's used very unorthodox methods. But if you think back to some of the great coaches, whether it's Phil Jackson, Popovich, they've all had something they do that's their thing, that's their niche that they do that's some weird
– That's different,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's done that, man. These guys have a – they're posing for team pictures after every game, and it's the wildest it's the wildest thing I've ever seen, man. Like you guys are grown men, like y'all realize it, right? But like we say that they're the second college team here, you know what I mean? With the way that these guys act, because they're super young, too, as well. But there are things about him that frustrate you. His rotations don't make a lot of sense sometimes, and you'll see him playing guys who probably should be the 13, 14, 15 man, but they're playing big minutes, and it frustrates you. But that guy's John Conchar. And this year he's having games where he's getting 15 points, 17 rebounds, and he's a 6'5 guard. And this is a guy that used to drive you crazy, used to drive me crazy. I'm pulling my hair like, why in the world are we playing John Conchar? But then you've got all these guys who are super developed and they're ready to play and they're giving you big minutes. So it's kind of a gift and a curse.
We're still looking for the first fan in NBA history who loves his coach's rotations. So
Yeah, for sure.
That's the number one complaint for
right. NBA. Right. So that's not. So let's move to this backcourt, which is special. So I put out a tweet that said Ja and Desmond Bane are a top blank backcourt. And the highest I got was top three. Lowest I got was, you know, top 10. I don't think there are nine backcourts better than them. They're at least knocking on that top five door to me. I mean, you got Steph and Clay, obviously. We got to see what Clay looks like once he gets his full –
CP3.
Right, CP3 and Book is obviously something to you know, you can't scoff at there. And then, you know, after that, I mean, depending if you want to talk about Luka and Brunson, depending on how you know, view those guys as players.
You know, Kyrie's there, obviously Harden.
Right, Kyrie. Right, Harden and Kyrie. So, but I think
McCollum and Dame, of course.
I have them clear.
I can't put them there right now.
Let's talk about this backcourt mainly. So everybody kind of on the outside kind of scoffed at or raised an eyebrow, kind of letting Grayson Allen walk, especially after how well he played in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the front office coaching staff saw something because Bane was able to step in. He's elevated his game. Brooks is who he is. I actually feel like, you didn't correct me if I'm wrong when you go, Anthony, that it makes sense. I think Brooks is a sixth man anyway with the way he plays. He's just that wild card. You know, if he's hitting that night, he's on that night, you ride him.
Mm-hmm.
If not, I think Bane's a little more consistent offensively. I think Dylan is a, you know, scrappy defender, play hard both ends. I think Bane's a little more solid offensively, like you get more even keel with him. So where are you with this backcourt, you know, Bane and Morant, and, you know, where do they rank to you, and what's so special about them, you know, as a young duo?
I kind of hate the rank questions anyway, because it's all subjective, but I never really thought about it. But that's a good question. I've never really thought about like that, because we threw around a question of where is Bane in the shooting guard position? Like, is he top 20, 15? Where is he? Like, is just a shooting guard altogether? But I hadn't really thought about that whole duo, like of John and Bane, where they would be. I got to say top 10, though, of course. I got the top of my head. I don't think I'll go top 5 or top 3, but as far as like, Cause Mike Conley and that's another good one. So we've named around 10. So they're somewhere in that mix for sure. Me personally, man, when Grayson was here, you follow me on Twitter. I'm a Bane. I've been a Bane guy. Since
I remember. Yes.
I'm like if a guy is this elite of a shooter, like put that dude in. It's like he don't give a crap, man. Like he's letting it fly for sure. Grayson used to look visibly scared on the court to us. I don't know if that was just his thing, because even after the game in the locker room, he used to look shaky all the time too. So, but I've always been a Bane guy. I didn't really like the fact that they didn't really give Bane a good shot to start last year. He went down when Grayson went down, and as soon as Grayson was back, Bane was back gone. I was like, man, ride that dude. You know what I mean? But they made, right. I think they made the right investment, over the summer. The Grizzlies don't really screw around. Like if they're either gonna extend you, or they're gonna, you know, move on from you. So they moved on from Grayson instead of giving him an extension this summer. Bane's phenomenal though, man. Like he's an incredible shooter, and it's weird with the Grizzlies, man, because their development is probably, I think Toronto has probably the only team I can say for sure is either the same level or better. But as far as like, because last year Bane pretty much showed us he could be a spot up shooter, and that's pretty much it. But like that kid's game is going to a whole nother level this year, and he's got a huge chip on his shoulder.
He's got some wiggle.
Yeah, and I didn't know he was that petty. I didn't know he had a chip on his shoulder at all, but he clearly has it. You know what I mean? I didn't know he felt the way about Dallas when I drafted him, and Boston and whoever. Like he feels the way about a lot of people, a lot of teams in the NBA, and he went at LeBron like he was, you know, nobody, the king of nothing, is how he went, was talking to him. So
that's kind of when I realized he had that chip, though.
We got a lot of little crazy dudes on this team, man. Because Anthony Melton's nuts too. You know what I mean? Him, Bane, Dylan Brooks, who's the king maniac. I don't know if you guys ever had the opportunity to see a Grizzlies game before it starts, but if you keep your eyes on Dylan Brooks during the pregame, you'll be highly entertained because he's a lunatic. Like
I saw when he was at Oregon, I went to the when they played Cal. Mm-hmm. And if you watch, if it's anything like that, I get
he's nuts, man. Like this, like there was a pregame situation where they, you know, we interviewed the coach before the game or whatever, and the players are nowhere near this area. Like they're somewhere doing whatever they do. Dylan Brooks is running up and down. Like, not running, but you know how you got your headphones on, you're just kind of vibing. He's just, like, bouncing through headphones on with, like, compression shorts on and nothing else on. Like, dude, what are you doing? Like, wilding, you know what I mean? Like, wilding out before the game. But, Dylan, like you said, I'm a big Dylan Brooks supporter. When a lot of people weren't, because he can get very inefficient at times, just to say.
I think that was a thing. He's just a lot of variance.
He'll fall into the Dylan world and just kind of forget that there's an actual game in the other team. You know, he'll kind of get out there and just start doing this thing. I think the perfect role for him would be coming off the bench, except for the fact that he's our best perimeter defender. Yeah. And he's one of those guys who he's a busybody defensively. He's kind of got that Patrick Beverley, you know, numbers don't really support you saying that I'm a good defender. I can really make it look like I'm a great defender. he's one of those type of guys where, you know what I mean? He plays defense very loud. He plays defense and offense very loud. You know the game, so I'm sure you know what I mean by that. So it may not be particularly.
It's not quiet on either end. It's a loud 15.
Yeah, and the numbers don't really line up, but you can feel the impact of his offense and his defense because he's loud as hell while he's doing it. So that's physically, verbally, you know, I mean, he's He's an aggressive dude. You can definitely feel a game. You can definitely look at a game and feel when it was impacted by Dylan. So that's why I kind of worry about bringing him off the bench, because he does set the tone so much for us defensively. He's one of those heart and soul type of guys. He's kind of like what Tony Allen was as far as being the heartbeat of the team. So as far as bringing him off the bench, I'm not quite there yet. Plus, we seem like we're trying to bring Zaire Williams up faster than I possibly – I don't even want to talk about that on this podcast because it just blows my mind how this dude looked horrible when we first got him. And he took some time off of the injury, and he did like some Matrix NBA IQ download software or something, and now he's like – it's wild, man, because, like, you know, he literally said, like, I was just sitting on the bench watching the games while I was injured, and it just kind of clicked. And then he came out and just started hooping. So it's like, all right, the Grizzlies just aren't missing. Like, you know, when are they going to make a bad draft pick? So
yeah, that's crazy. So Kings, what do you think about this? Where does this backcourt rank to you? And just what do you think about the Brooks Bain kind of dynamic based on what Anthony just said?
I think the backcourt is definitely a top 10 backcourt. It's definitely one of those backcourts that can sneak into the top five. You know, obviously John Morant has a superstar type level talent. Desmond Bane is producing at a high level at a high quality starter, and he can shoot the ball really well. So yeah, I think they're automatically top 10, but I think they have a better case for top five than most people would think. You know, if you look around the league, you see how many backcourts are actually playing at a high level and winning on both ends. I think they have a better case for the top five than what most people would think. With the Dylan Brooks situation, it's just hard, Maples, to sell a young guy who's playing the best perimeter defense on the team and is giving you 19 points a game that he needs to come off the bench. Like,
yes.
You can't fathom.
Especially when that guy's a lunatic.
Yeah, you can't reasonably tell him with the production he is giving on both ends that he needs to come off the bench. Like, he does it. I mean, he's clearly helping the team on both ends. They're clearly winning with him in the starting lineup. They were winning when Ja was out and he was playing well. So it's like, that guy he's a starting NBA player. You know what I mean? And you have to find, you know, a better six man, like, you know, bring up one of your other guys you try to develop and have that guy be the six man. But your starting lineup is fire right now. I mean, it's hot right now. It's spurred you to where you're at. You can't play with fire, man. Just you keep going. If it's not broke, don't fix it. That's really how it is.
Mm-hmm. What is Dylan's timetable right now?
Oh, it was 3 to 5 weeks, I think, when he went down. Man, that dude, ain't no telling with that dude, man. Like, like you said, man, he's maniacal, bro. Like, and when he's back, you'll know he's back. The NBA is going to know he's back. You know what I mean? I think it's like 3 to 5 weeks. I think we're probably like about a month away. They said sometime around either right before or right after the trade deadline.
All right, so it's some time before they even got to consider about the lineup. So it's okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. Got it. And we're starting Zaire Williams now for the most part. So
Last thing we got to talk about 12. One of my loudly climbing up my favorite player list. Just, I said it the other day. Is I'm not calling him a second best player. I'm not talking about, you know, just statistical output. I'm talking about sheer entertainment value. It doesn't get much better than LaMelo and John Morant for me when I watch the game. But just the likelihood of seeing something you've never seen before, or you won't see that much with those two, is just high every time. You're just glued to the TV. Just the way they carry themselves, the flair, the amount of love they have for the game. Like, it's infectious. So talk about his development, because last year it was like, whoa, he could be something. I saw people, you know, even though because of some growing pains, talking about, you know, Jonas was the best player on the team in the regular season, which was wild to me when I watched. This year you had a little tiff about, are they better without him? Because they wasn't at Renner Streets when he sat there. You know the Ewing theory. You know how it go, Anthony. But obviously, we know that's not true. But he comes back, and the only point guard I can say that's clearly playing better than him, and he's hit a snafu lately with his efficiency and probably runs into some fatigue, is Steph. But he's playing like the second best point guard, who, depending on how you feel about Trey. I think defensively, I think Josh started to at least try on that end this year, I think, which was a big change from last year. You could tell, you know, he's thinking about it, and he sees that it's going to take him being at least a passable defender for them to be, you know, that championship-level team. So just talk about 12, man. Like you said, the hardest part of a rebuild is finding a guy to build around, and you guys kind of hit that out the park already at age 21. So talk about 12, man.
Man, you can talk about 12 forever. He
right.
Ja's one of those guys who he kind of had a transitional season last year. He came in, made big noise his rookie year. He had a chip on his shoulder because he, like you said, he wasn't being treated like he was on the same tier as a Zion Williamson. If you go back and look at the way Stephen A. Smith just went on a rant about, you know, how big Zion would have been for the Knicks, and
right.
He almost acted like Ja was like a nobody. You know, he didn't even want number two. So Ja had an incredible year that first year. Like I said, led us to play-in tournament situation. We were in the eighth seed for, you know, most of the season, but they fell apart in the bubble and, you know, ended up not making it. And Portland, you know, put them out or whatever. But that second season with Ja, you know, a lot of guys go through this. Teams, they've got film on you. They strategize against you different. So he came into the year. Teams who just told us, and all right, we're not gonna let that one dude, you know, go off on us. They were, you know, basing their strategy to stop Ja Morant. Plus, he had that ankle injury that I think that he came back from super early, and I don't think he ever really fully recovered from last season until the end of the year. And then, you know, he finished the year super strong, lost his mind in the play-in game and in the playoffs. You know, just killing Utah's. I think he had like 40 something in one of the games or something. He was just, you know, going crazy, and it was really his coming out party. But this year has been the year where he really has taken, you know, that next leap. And I think that the injury he had this year and seeing his team win without him, I think it made him have to step up a notch, because I think he came out like, and let's just be honest, this is an extension year for Ja. And he knows that, you know, all-star game, all-NBA team, those type of things, you know, it gets you that Luka money, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
So I think that he realized those things, and he came out like, you know, I'm about to be that dude this year because I'm about to get my money. You know what I mean? I'm not knocking him for that at all. But I think that he was putting the defense to the side, and I think that he realized that this team needs me to be more than just, you know, 12 who can just come out here and score 30, 40 points. They need me to show that same effort on defense. And he came back rejuvenated, and our defense has gone from being the worst in the league to top 10 in the league, all within 40 something odd games. You know what I mean? So he's an incredible player, man. And he's learned how to pick his spots better now. At first, Ja used to just kind of defer the entire game. He just kind of go off in the fourth quarter, or he'll come out hard in the first and then he'll fade away. He's finding his spots within the flow of the game. Like, he knows, okay, we're up four. If I go to the basket, get an and one, we're up seven, it's a total different game now. You know what I mean? So he's kind of finding those spots. And when he knows he needs to pick his spots or whatever, he knows how to get his guys going. Another major thing with the Grizzlies this year, and we've seen in the past five, six games a lot, is that Ja realizes that the best version of the Grizzlies is when I get Jaren Jackson Jr. going and going early.
Point guard.
Right. And it's been such a weird thing, man, because Ja and Jaren have never been good at the same time. and when Ja realizes he can get that guy going, and when he actually does that, and he's trying to make Jaren be that dude and set him up to be that dude, it makes the team that much better, and it makes Ja's game a lot easier, makes his job a lot easier as well. So, like I said, man, he's a super smart guy. He finds motivation in some of the smallest things. Sometimes you may call that being petty. That's fine.
All great players do it.
Yeah, but he does it, man. Like that whole thing about fans booing him or whatever. It was like two or three dudes. And Ja just heard that louder than anything in the arena. And the thing with the little kids the other day was hilarious at the Golden State game.
That was hilarious.
With the jerseys. Like, that's 12, though, man. That's the kind of stuff he does. Like, he remembers it. Like, some guys with Grizzly Bear Blues, which is SB Nation, some of the bloggers here, they made a joke about the Grizzlies being better without Ja, and Ja came at him. You know what I mean? After the game, Ja came at him for even playing like that. You know what I mean? So that's 12, though, man. But he's he's a Memphis is a different type of city, man. And Ja is as much a Memphian you can be and not be from Memphis. And it's so weird to see because he's so young. Right. But he fits into the city. Yeah, he fits into the city in a way that no one probably thought he would.
That's what I was about to say. It's like it was that he feels like the city, him and the city have a bond. Like it's just, you know, kind of
man. Ja might be a little bit too Memphis, man. I ain't gonna lie to you. You know what I mean?
And the main thing that I liked is that the Evel Knievel stuff has gone way down. Like he was making me nervous the first couple of years.
Yeah.
Like, dude, please, they need your butt on the court. But
yeah.
Kings, talk about 12, man.
I mean, it's a lot that you can say about Ja. I think Maples, we had this conversation during that draft. We told people, you specifically, but, you know, I was there with you. We told people, we say, hey, man, this kid can play.
The gap is not big.
The gap is not as big as you guys would like to think. And I will never forget when I first seen Ja Morant and I first got turned on to when he was in college. He had one play where he took off on a fast break and he exploded to the rim on one of the craziest left-hand dunks I ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, this dude is crazy. And I was like, hey, I know he's not on a P5 conference or a P5 team, but hey, this is a lottery talent, bro. And I remember I watched that and then it slowly as the season went on, he started climbing. The mock draft started climbing. People were like, hey, this Ja Morant, he got a lot of talent. And, you know, when you watched his college tape, he just jumped off the screen. And it was one of those things where it was like, this guy has this special ability. He has special physical tools. He can shoot the ball and he has great skill sets in terms of handling the ball, being able to get to the rim. Like, you know, I was never sold on there being that much of a guy. I knew Zion was a generational talent, but I always felt that Ja could have something to say. And you're seeing it now. You know, year three, Ja's basically been in playoff hunt or in the playoffs since he's came into the league. Like, I mean, there's something to be said, right, with basketball players and impacting winning basketball. I mean, you still have a lot of people. And I think Ja, I really want him to keep that chip on his shoulder, because you still have a lot of people that doubt him. You know, I go on Twitter, you give people give Ja his props, they love what they see, and then you still have people say, oh, well, Zion's still better. He's not better than Zion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we haven't seen Zion play in God knows how long. And, you know, I love Zion's talent. I want to see the guy get back on the court. But it's like the fact that this guy been on a playoff team, on a team that was rebuilding, and it's taken us to playoffs for three straight years, and people still aren't giving him the respect that he deserves. Like, I think he needs to keep taking those things personally.
Yeah,
keep letting that elevate his play.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump in real fast, too, because that's just the Memphis and me, man. You said a couple things that triggered me. like the head patting he's getting from certain people in media is starting to get on my nerves. Like, the Memphian in me is starting to get fired up. Like, guys like J.J. Redick, like this, you know, the most improved player narrative. Man, don't do that, man. Like, don't. No, nah, man, don't do that. Because, you know, what rookie of the year have you seen? What former rookie of the year have you seen get most improved player, man? You know what I mean? It's like, and then when you bring Job in these MVP conversations, it's like, well, he's not doing enough. And, yeah. And you've never seen people do this with Luka, though. You know what I mean? Luka got MVP. People were saying he should be the MVP. And they've never been higher than the 60 in the West, never. But there are people saying Luka should be MVP, and Ja is taking his team. We're third in the West, man. You know what I mean? And how can you not say that this kid shouldn't get serious consideration for MVP? And the thing is, when people are saying, well, look what they're doing without him. How do we know that's not – how do you know that's just not extreme leadership, where this guy has created a culture where even if I ain't out here, My boy's gonna go out there and roll. You know what I mean?
Hey, Michael Wilbon, he said that's what Chris Paul was doing with the Suns.
Exactly.
And that's the funny thing, because remember when Luka, his second year, the team had better on and off numbers when he was not playing? And they tried to explain that away. But now with Ja, it's like, oh.
Yeah, man, quit patting my boy on the head, man. I got 12 messed up, man.
I mean, but the pendulum swung, you know, I think Ja. They see it. I think he got the second most votes out of guards right now.
He's past Luka. And we joke about it because, man, this dude's taking on a whole nation and beating them.
Right.
You know what I mean? So So shout out, man. Shout out to 12 for sure.
Yeah. All right, man. I just, you know, maybe that's the Rangers meatball, Anthony. We had to discuss the Grizzlies with an mm-hmm. insider. Let's peruse a little bit of this league. Kings got to talk about the Sixers lately. Winners 9 out of 10. Embiid, I can't think of somebody playing better than him in this last 10 to 15 games. He's kind of playing out of his mind. What this means for me is Philly's got to make that trade, man, and get something for Ben to where, because you got a guy playing that well and the team is rallying around him. If you could flip Ben into, you know, usable players in a playoff series, I think you got a legitimate shot. I think as is, you need something else to compete with, you know, the Nets and the Bucks at this point. Who are going to be the top two teams, given how the Bulls are starting to, you know, crash a little bit. So just – I know you've been a big and B guy. You never thought that the gap between Jokic and him was big. You stayed 10 toes down in your beliefs. But just talk about Embiid lately. And then what you think Philly should do, you know, with the Ben situation. Morey stays willing to ride it out for years, which I think is stupid because the value is only going to go down as the contract continues. And it's just a big cloud over the team. And you can't – Embiid is not the healthiest guy. So you don't want to take a chance and, you know, kind of waste a year where he's being, you know, durable. So talk to me, Kings.
Yeah, I mean, this is Embiid is a dominant player. He's a super smart player in the NBA. He's one of the best big men we have of our generation. And the thing with Embiid has always been whenever he's available, whenever he's healthy, he's always playing like one of the best players in the NBA. But that's always been his problem, being available and then being healthy when he's playing. So it's like when I'm not shocked to see this stretch of dominance because this is what he's shown for like the past 3 years now. You know what I mean? He's shown that when he's there and he has all his health, he's going to be a dominant player. He's going to impact the game. He's going to put Philly in positions to win. I'm actually very, very impressed with what I've seen from Maxey and the step he's taken. And what he's given them production-wise that to fill in some of the void that Ben Simmons has left. But I absolutely agree with you. The pettiness that Morey is showing right now is you're wasting a year of your superstar player. That's just the bottom line. This should have been resolved before the season, but no people they won't say it. But feelings got in the way. This situation is deeper than rap now at this point with the Sixers and Ben Simmons. A lot of pride is on the line for both parties. And at some point, somebody has to be the adult in the room and be like, look, we got to move on. We got to take best available and we got to rebuild this team. And you know what I mean? And for me with Ben Simmons, with the type of player he is, you know, the haul for Ben Simmons in the offseason is not going to change from the deadline. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, whoever wants Ben Simmons is going to give you the same thing in the offseason that they're going to give you at the deadline. So for Morey, it's just, you know what I mean? It has to be one of those things where it's like, you're not going to get that Dame Lillard trade. You know what I mean? Like, it's not been the Blazers are not going to blow it up, send you Dame Lillard just for Ben Simmons and maybe a pick or two. You know, if the Blazers are trading Dame Lillard, they want all the picks. Yep, you know what I'm saying? Hard. Like they're going to go full rebuild. We want to draft our own guys. You know what I'm saying? So it's like trying to hold out for a guy like that, trying to hold out for a guy like Beal. You know what I mean? Like at some point you just have to be like, you know, Indiana, can we get Brogdon?
Can we get yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, can we get good guys who can give us depth and play at a high level and, you know, give us a championship team where we have our superstar and we have good pieces around him that can support him and that can play off of him? Like, I think too many teams get caught up in the star hunting thing. And I know the homie Knapp on the timeline, he's been one of those people who's been anti-star hunting. He loves the Lakers' misery because he likes to use that as a lesson for people sacrificing depth, sacrificing guys that fill a team role just to star hunt names. I think teams have to be wise how they build. Because look at the, look at Milwaukee. Chris Middleton is a borderline star. You know what I mean? He's an all-star talent. He's an all-star player. But he's not like a true star player necessarily. But he plays well off Giannis. He plays well in the scheme. He plays well in the system that, you know, that Coach Bud has. It's about building a proper team. And then you look at the Bucks now, they're coming back. They don't have, you know, three stars, but they're one of the best teams in the NBA. You know what I mean? So it's like build the right team, get the right guys, and let the chips fall where they may. You know what I mean? Like the star hunting, the draft pick hoarding is just out of control in the NBA. It's just beyond out of control in the NBA right now.
All right. Anthony, I know you're a Grizzlies guy, but, you know, I know you do pay attention a little bit what's going on throughout the rest of the season. You're a basketball fan, so, you know, talk to us about Embiid and the Philly situation, in your opinion.
Man, they're one of those teams that you kind of forget about them while they're just constantly rising throughout the NBA. Embiid, like I said, I think the gap between him and Jokic is a lot slimmer than people try to act. So y'all about to get me stirred up because
that's why we're here, man. That's why we're here.
It's like people champion Jokic while getting bounced from the first round of playoffs. And the Nuggets, their best run was when Jamal Murray lost his mind in the bubble. But all the credit goes. I'm done. I ain't gonna go that deep into it, man, because you know. But anyway, Jokic is an incredible player. Don't get me wrong. He's probably him and Embiid are 1A, 1B to me as far as bigs are concerned. But it's weird because even when I was listening to Kings talk, imagine describing the 2021-2022 basketball season to a kid 20 years from now, and saying, "Hey, you know that COVID shot you got to get for school." There was a dude who wouldn't play because he didn't want to get that. Like, for real? Like, oh, yeah, then there was this other dude. He didn't play because he was mad. For real? Like, you got that going on in the same NBA season, man. Like, imagine trying to explain Ben Simmons and Kyrie Irving to a child 20 years from now. You know what I mean? But that Philadelphia situation is wild with Ben Simmons. It really shouldn't have got to this point. It should have gotten taken care of in the offseason. Yep. I'm not saying you particularly have to give the player his way. I'm usually power to the players, pro players on these type of things. I think that Ben plays a way bigger responsibility in this than people are giving credit for. They're not holding him hostage. Dude, go out there and play. You know what I mean? And I've been critical of him because I'm big about mental health and those type of things. And I don't think there's something you should cry wolf about. And I'm not particularly saying that he is, but I just hope that he isn't. You know what I mean? Because I know he said there's a – I don't think there's something to really joke around about. I don't think there's something to just kind of pull out whenever. But Philadelphia, they're very good. And I think if they can turn, like I said, like King said, it seems like they're trying to swing too big. You're not going to get Damian Lillard. You're not going to get, you know, whoever you're trying to get. Just try to get a few guys that can come in and play a role that can help you match up against Milwaukee, help you match up against, you know, Brooklyn or whatever. You know, call up Detroit and see if you can get like a Jeremy Grant or, you know, something that can kind of build you for right now. Because if you think that Ben Simmons is a lost cause, either try to get something for him or just, you know, whatever. But right now they're just arguing over, like you said, hurt feelings. So and it's so wild, man. Even to think about that, there's an NBA player who hasn't played a minute this season because of a spat. Because of a post-game interview in the playoffs last year and hurt feelings, and he just hadn't played. And it's gonna be, like I said, it's gonna be so hard to explain it.
Right.
But they're
he's up to he's up to $11 million in fines. Like he's paying for this.
Yeah. It's like I think I talked to Amari Sankofa, who's a friend of mine. Amari covers the Detroit Pistons for Detroit Free Press. Used to cover the Grizzlies for the Athletic back when he was living here in Memphis, and he thinks that he gives Ben a lot more blame as far as the how this whole thing comes off. Because I was like, man, Ben is really letting Clutch speak for him, and they're really making him look bad. And Amari says, he's like, nah, this feels like more Ben Simmons to me. Like, I think this is just kind of who Ben Simmons is. And I thought it was just a Rich Paul thing too. I was like, man, this kid's in Rich Paul. Like, this is going to be the first blemish on Rich Paul. Rich Paul is losing money for this kid. He's making him look like an idiot. He's making him look selfish. starting to think this is just who Ben Simmons is, man. You know what I mean? So, and like I said, I'm usually a power to the players type of guy. But how can you look at a team who's winning like this and not get that urge like Kyrie Irving got? You know what I mean? Not get that urge like Michael Jordan got, you know, when he was away from the game. How can you see this and not say, look, man, let's do what it takes to get out there. I can help this team. I'm one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. I'm a 6'9 demigod player. Let's do what it takes to make this happen. Plus, y'all already hit me for $12 million. I done gave y'all $12 million back. You know what I mean? So it just seems so ridiculous. And it's like you forget about them until you see some tweet about, well, Daryl Morey said there's a list of 30 dudes he might trade for or whatever. So call up Sacramento, get the trade done. It feels inevitable at this point. You know, just go get the deal that Sacramento has on the table and make it happen.
Yeah, man. I'll
say this from some folks who've been around Ben that I heard of. He has a bad temper. He has a bad temper. That's something that you know, some people, I'm not obviously not gonna put their names around. They've been around him in certain environments, and he has a bad temper. So this is definitely a Ben Simmons thing. Look, Rich Paul, we know he plays the politics and he does what he can to get his guys to where they want to go, but he's not costing his guys $12 million.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He is not costing his guy $12 million, which is going to come out from his pocket, is going to ruin his reputation. This is definitely Ben Simmons has decided he does not want to play for this team under any circumstance, and he is hell-bent on not playing for this team under any circumstance. And he's willing to ride it out. Image be damned. You know,
it's
image
so crazy, man. Because he, like, dude, you're not Harden, who had, you know, a year left on his deal. You're not Kawhi. You're not these guys who've made these moves.
He got that full 4 years.
Yeah, you got four to go, man. And these guys are like, hey, we'll gladly, you know, take that rebate. We'll glad to turn those rebate coupons on your contract for sure. Like, and like, bro, you're giving these people money back. And he's killing his legacy, man. Like, for sure. For sure. And he's too good of a player. He's too good of a player.
Just like, at the end of the day, you want to see a guy that talented play, right? Yeah. You don't want to see, you know, that's kind of what it is. So anyway, we are at the halfway point of the NBA season. I talked to you guys before. I wanted to get halfway through your most disappointing thing. Could be a team player about the season. And then your most surprising team player about the season. We'll start with our guests. Anthony, what you got for us? Most disappointing team or player? Most surprising team or player?
Disappointing team or player. Disappointed but not upset. The Atlanta Hawks. If you follow me on Twitter, I have a war with their fan base as well as New Orleans. I've taken it upon myself to create Southern rivalries in the NBA.
I gotta add. I get the Pelicans thing because it's division, and that's gonna be is there. What about the ATL? How does the ATL beef work? How did that happen?
They're so close to us, like geographically. Gotcha. You know what I mean? And then Trae Young is there. Trae and Ja.
Okay. I got it.
Yeah, they're right up the street as far as, like, you know, road trips or whatever. So okay,
I got you.
And you know, Atlanta is full of Memphis transplants, and everybody's got cousins and people in Atlanta, and they stole our music. There is no Atlanta sound that just came from that whole thing is Memphis. So, you know, Atlanta sound is Memphis rap with Balenciagas on and Gucci belts, so and Waffle House. But you know, that's about it. But no, man, it's just been fun. Like the Hawks organization. I really question what they did last year when they spent so much money to go to kind of make themselves legitimized last year. And then they had that wild playoff run that landed them in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think it kind of created a false reality of what that team is.
Yep. They gave me shades of the Blazers in 2019.
Yeah.
Well, you know it's fake, but you just kind of, you got to fake the phone.
Yeah, they wrote it to death. And if you want a good laugh, tune in. After a Hawks game, go to one of their Twitter spaces and you will laugh your eyeballs out.
I'm about to check that out.
Yeah, man, because their fans really think they're the Warriors. They really think that they, you know, they're this next up team. And they're really upset that they're not good again this year. the clock has struck midnight and the crystal shoes have disappeared. But Hawks are disappointed, man. Like I had a little bet on FanDuel because I was drinking the Kool-Aid myself. I did an about face on them, and I bet on FanDuel that they would, you know, be over on wins, and yeah, looking like they're. Yeah, it's not happening. So, yeah, Atlanta for sure. Then Trae Young saying stuff, talking about their board. No, y'all just really ain't that good. Man. And, like, it's crazy because I used to argue with their fans, and all the stuff that I said is what happened is happening. I was like, y'all were in a position where you got a ton of young players. Because even before they added guys like Jalen Johnson and what's the kid's name? I can't think of his name. The guard with the big hair. Before you add young players like that, you still had a super good young core of players. And right. Instead of trying to develop your guys from within, you went out and you upgraded all your guys with journeymen and guys who, you know, don't really care too much about winning. If you look at their history, the guy's name?
Gallinari.
Yeah. That dude don't give a crap, man. That dude's been chasing a paycheck the entire time he's been in the NBA. Like, you go out there and you get these guys, and then you're surprised when they flake out on you in season two. And it's just like you make a trade with New York because you know you won't be able to extend Cam Reddish this offseason. I'm like, bro, what are y'all doing? And, like, they – and the Collins thing got sketchy last year. You didn't know they were going to bring him back. And it's like and it's crazy because the best deal that they made between when they were bad a couple of years ago and now was they're big. Man, I'm so bad with names. Plus, it's midnight here in Memphis. Capella. Like, and that was a guy that you got the year before, and that's really all you needed to do because he's – and all this other stuff they went out and did, even Bogdanovich, everything they did seems pointless in hindsight because the best deal they did was getting Capella. And they did that the year before. You know what I mean? If they just got Capella, kept that young core, you probably would have been you would have probably still been the same team you are now. And plus, you've been playing your young guys even more, developing them, and you had a clear direction for this team. And like I said, they're just super disappointing to me. As far as surprising players, little disappointing players, who's really disappointing me this season?
Well, it was just one of each, you know, one disappointing team slash.
Oh, okay. Either one. Okay.
Surprising.
I'm not going to toot the Grizzlies' horn anymore. y'all think I heard enough of that. Surprising in a good way to me is Chicago. Yeah, we play them today. Since it is midnight here in Memphis, this is my third joke about recording the late podcast.
We appreciate you.
Yeah, for sure. I'm having a blast, man. The Bulls, of course. I figured they would. I thought this team would struggle chemistry-wise because you got three guys who, you know, have had the ball in their hands. And DeRozan and LaVine is almost like looking at each other. They're pretty much the same dude, except for LaVine shoots threes. And Lonzo Ball, I figured he would be better here because I'm a big Lonzo Ball guy. I'm glad he's got the opportunity to actually be a point guard and not whatever they were doing with him in Sacramento. And that's Sacramento and New Orleans. But, yeah, man, it's wild to see how good they are. I look forward to seeing them today. When they come here for MLK Day, MLK Day game is always a great game, always a big deal here in Memphis. But we won't see LaVine, of course, but that Bulls team has been phenomenal, man. And I've got to tip my hat to them that they've been this good. I think they're for real, too, because you talk about championship formula. They got some of that same stuff, you know what I mean? Plus, they don't really have an all-defensive player. Lonzo Ball is a great on-ball defender. But, you know, we kind of forget about Vucevic and how good he's been for them as well.
Right.
So
they got to just figure out, you know, that's the same thing with Donovan and OKC, mm-hmm. that Chris Paul kind of had. They got to figure out what they're going to do offensively as far as moving the ball. It's just way too much. That was the thing with the OKC. It's too much ISO.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, for sure.
With that, Kings, most disappointing team or player, the most surprising team or player at the halfway point. Who you got for us, bro?
Yeah, the most disappointing, I don't go team, I'll say, because the Hawks, that's actually a good pick. That's one of them. But I'll say the most disappointing player. Man, the most disappointing player so far to me has definitely been, you know,
definitely been, I think, James Harden. I think James Harden has really been disappointing this season. It's actually kind of wild with how much of a load KD has to carry offensively. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're not able to beat good teams. when James Harden played great against the Lakers, kind of went on a little run, people kind of thought he was back, right? That was kind of the angle. And it seems back that he's reverted back to playing at a subpar level, at least for his standards. So just to see James Harden like this, I almost said Curry, but, you know, he's at least, you know, is competing. He's gotten his team to win, so I won't put him there. But James Harden, to me, he just doesn't look like himself this year. Kind of looks like a shell of himself. But he's still setting guys up. He's still getting his assist numbers up, still getting playmaking for that team at a high level. Just that scoring, you know, just that some of his decision making is just not been up to par. He just looks washed this year. But you know, James Harden though, he's James Harden. He still has that talent, so he's always going to be a threat. And the Nets are still a contender regardless.
Right.
In terms of the most surprising, you know, it has to be the Bulls. I had them as a 7th seed. Them to have the record they have, despite the injuries. You know what I mean?
I had them 4th, baby. Show me love.
you had them high, man. The way that LeVine and DeRozan have coexisted, the way Caruso and Lonzo have locked up as that backcourt, even without the rim protection, the way Vucevic is at least trying to compete on both ends. Man, you got to give it up to the Bulls, man. You know, the Bulls really have knocked it out the park so far this year. For them now, it's just finishing strong and having a great playoff run to cap it all off and seeing how far they can go. I obviously don't have them going that far because they still deficiencies that they're just not going to get them over Milwaukee or Brooklyn. But they can raise hell, man.
Right. And,
I think they deserve everybody's respect this year.
Right. Yeah, for me, disappointing. It's a player for me. It's really Julius Randle.
Oh man, yeah.
One of my, you know, he's one of my favorite players. You know, I got you know, support my baby. I have a baby Laker agenda that I like to ride out. It's just everything's down for him. Even the defensive energy he showed when he was turning the corner, you know, that's down. Efficiency all the way down, not affecting the game as much as he was last year. So, you know, hopefully that changes. I still believe in Jew, but man, they changed those foul rules a little bit. He looks lost. So that's what for me. The Knicks are also struggling. They were 4 seed last year. So, mm-hmm. You know, he's just carrying over from the playoff struggles. Surprising for me, I got to be honest, man. Like, it's Bulls related, but just digging deeper, is DeRozan, man. I knew he was good watching him with the Spurs last year in that system. He was still good, but just seeing him like knock on the MVP candidate door, given how crazy he played this first half of the season, is what I did not expect. That's probably a shocker for me, seeing him play
at this point of his career.
Like, right. Exactly. It's the age, right? It's the age. It's the age that got me. Like, who does that in their early to mid 30s? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to decide to throw myself into an MVP conversation. So that's the biggest surprise for me. Real quick before we get out of here, you two, something you want to see second half of the season from a, it could be from a player, from a team, something you want to see. Anthony, start with you.
Say that one more time, my man.
Something you want to see second half of the season from a player, team, just real quick before we get out of here.
Something I want to see from a player or from a team. I want to see LaMelo Ball take that next step. We've seen the flash. We've seen, you know, the big time plays. I want to see him get that, solidify that Charlotte team to be a playoff team. Him and Miles Bridges have a good thing going down there. I want to see him kind of really show that second level of maturity this season and just kind of be, you know, that guy for them this year for sure.
All right, Kings, make sure anything besides the Lakers trade 7 people. I know what you're about to go, Kings.
I'm actually not going to go over that trade. It's actually, I mean, it's Lakers related. I just want to see Anthony Davis be Anthony Davis.
Okay. Yeah.
It's been 2 seasons of this weird type of play that we've seen from AD. I just want AD to come back and be the Anthony Davis that we have seen for, you know, all the seasons prior from these last 2 injury-filled years.
Don't be too good, though. They owe the Grizzlies that pick.
Oh, yeah, right. If it's 1-10, it's Pelicans, and anything beyond that, it's Grizzlies, right?
Something like that, yeah. I need them to be the 11 seed. Yeah, I need them to, not 11. I need them to be 11 from the bottom. That'd be perfect.
Right. For me, y'all both, well, Kings, no. Anthony, you probably see me tweet about it. Brandon Ingram's my favorite player. I want to see Zion back. I really think that team could make the play-in. Hopefully he can get out there. I know they sent him to Portland to go to Nike Labs to rehab and try to get himself right for the season. Anthony, I know this goes against your principles as a Grizzly fan because they're in the division. But I do want to see Z play. I got to see my B.I., my boy B.I. play in games that matter. At least get to the play-in, man.
Yeah, man, I've met a lot of Pelicans fans that are cool. Like, I talk a lot of crap on Twitter, man, but I've made some legitimate, like, Twitter friends from talking crap with other with fan bases. And,
and that's what it's about, as long as you
know, the Hawks and the Pelicans fans are some of the best, man, for sure. Right. Yeah, for sure.
So make sure you guys tap in with Anthony Sane on Twitter at Sane_Asylum, correct?
Yeah, no, it's just straight – at Sane Asylum. S-A-I-N.
At Sane Asylum. I'm sorry. Yeah. At Sane Asylum. Sane is spelled S-A-I-N. My fault. At Sane Asylum. Tap in with my name with all Grizzlies talk. At It's Kings, bro. At my sub, DigiMebbles55_MST. Drop us feedback. Give us suggestions with the pod. We appreciate all you guys tapping in. Anthony, once again, appreciate you, my brother. I know you stayed up too late hanging up.
Man, it's Tuesday in Memphis right now, I believe.
It's Tuesday. All right, y'all, man. Y'all be safe. We are out of here.